Good morning. Eat the World Day XB comes to the UAE from February the 23rd until the 26th at Burj Park, bringing together street food from London, California and Singapore. I headed to Singapore last week to meet some of the cooks and to learn more about the dishes and ingredients. Known for its melting pot of Chinese, Malay and Indian cultures, Singapore has seen street food flourish since the 1800s, when the island started thriving as an entry port. Part of the food culture are the 100-plus hawker centres, with the National Environmental Agency stating there are around 15,000 stalls altogether. Chicken hanwanese, boiled chicken and rice cooked in chicken fat, pandan leaf and ginger and garlic, and laksa, thick bihun or rice vermicelli in a spicy coconut broth with bean curd, fish cakes and bean sprouts, just to give you a little taste and flavour. Another dish is nasi lemak, which means rich rice, and I sit down with Chef Shen Tan at Revolution Coffee in Media Circle to try her hugely popular take on this traditional dish and to find out more about the woman who left the corporate world to pursue her dream.
So this is a classic Singaporean breakfast dish, and it originally started as a Malay breakfast dish, and it's steamed coconut rice that's, you know, really full of flavour. And it used to be served very simply, because obviously when you don't have much access to protein and expensive materials, ingredients, it was just chilli and some fried anchovies, which we have here on the plate, and maybe a fried egg. And as we got more affluent, we started adding more luxurious items on, so fried chicken, like an entire fried fish, and some curries, you know. But the original intent is really quite simple. Egg, some rice, some chili, and a little fried anchovies.
People are raving about yours. And so, you know, what sounds simple, what are you doing to make this so special? What's getting people excited about this dish?
It was the dish that I started out with, and I like to think that I went back to the basics in understanding how flavour was achieved. And it's actually, the original rice dish is a vegan dish. It's, you know, you get the flavours from the herbs and the spices that are naturally occurring. And this dish has 10 ingredients, just the rice in itself. So it's lemongrass, there's ginger, there's shallots, there's fenugreek, there's, you know, salt, coconut milk.
So I'm going to dip in then. I'm digging into this delicious rice. But is this the chili here?
Yes, so this is actually a creation of mine, because I'm working with Revolution Coffee, and they've actually worked with half of their beans are actually roasted, that are roasted are Indonesian beans. So I really wanted to delve into that whole idea of Southeast Asian ingredients and ideas and flavours. So I used the coffee in the making of the sambal sweet chilies normally, and it gives a nice dark roasty flavour, and you know, that bitter, and not unlike how the Mexicans use chocolate, dark chocolate in the mole. And, you know, working on building on those flavors. So you have that complex, you have heat, you have spiciness, you have umami, but you also have that toasty barbecue flavor.
Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. And then with this crispiness as well, is really, really lovely. Talk me through this.
Well, that's a omelette slice, literally. And it's just something that we fry with a little bit of salt, and that's it.
Yeah. So just to get that crispiness, so you make your omelette and then you just fry it off, and that's really beautiful. Now, is this another chili?
Yes. Now, this is a sambal belacan, and it is one of the chilies that we have in Singapore. But this is a family recipe, and I've changed it up a little bit. It's not as sweet, and it's got a bit of a, you know, zingy tartness to it, and it goes very nicely with the coconut rice, which is richer. So you get that nice, you know, tartness cutting through the richness of it, and then you have the fried anchovies, which are crunchy. So, you know, you get that textural contrast as well.
I love it. I love that. I love this. It's kind of got that heat, and then the bit of sweetness, and then this crunchiness with the anchovies, which is just wonderful. You say family recipe. Well, tell me about your family then.
Oh, my family is really a mixed bag. Which is what, if you think about it, Singapore food cuisine is. Singapore food is a mixed bag. It draws from so many influences that you couldn't really put a finger on any of it. So my mum's side of the family is 100% Cantonese Chinese. And my dad's side of the family is a little bit more exotic. They are from the Riau Islands as well as Medan. And supposedly we have Dutch blood, we have Indonesian, local Indonesian blood, so that's why I'm quite tan. And I mean, we literally draw from all influences. We love our spices. I love Indian food, Malay food, Chinese food, everything, you know.
And you didn't start out as a cook, though. You were doing something completely different. So tell me about how you got into, really, into the, and reaching the status you're at today here in Singapore.
Well, I did 16 years in events and marketing, and I was the events director at Forbes magazine. It was 2008, Lehman crisis. You know, Lehman bankers had caused the financial crisis. And I was 36 years old. And I thought to myself, if I don't give it a shot, I'll never know. So I chucked it all in and became a hawker selling nasi lemak, street food, at Maxwell Market. Which is a very famous hawker center that we have. And it was amazing, you know, and I haven't looked back since.
Were you making the same sort of thing then? What were you making on the, at the hawker market?
Yeah, it was exactly this. This is the dish I started with, and I learned very quickly how to make it. And it's obviously been refined and improved on because it's been 8 years, 7 years soon, 9 years tomorrow. And, you know, in terms of ideas and flavors, you grow and you capitalize on what you've learned, and you're always improving, always thinking about how can I make it better. Yeah.
Mod Sin, which is what you're really known for. So modern Singaporean. And so this is a really lovely what you're serving today, and I'm having it for breakfast. So for you, as you're saying, you know, you're always refining and working on flavours and textures and tastes. And so it's interesting, isn't it? So what was the tradition and what then becomes something that is taken from the street and maybe served in a restaurant? I mean, like you're working like with raffles and places like that.
If you were to take that and refine it, then, you know, it would be a completely different dish. You would maybe not serve it in such a rustic manner. But I think that term, Mod Sin, it's also kind of something that trips people up, because you always think, like, what makes something Mod Sin? And Singapore food is, by definition, already fusion. It is already very modern. I mean, Singaporean food, you know, the classics as we know it, is probably only 50 years old, 60 years old. So it's something that I struggle with on an intellectual and creative level every day, you know. And I just finished reading this amazing book by Sylvia Tan, who is one of our, you know, doyens of Singapore food cooking, and she's written 10 cookbooks, and she's put out a book about Singapore food, street food actually, and I just finished it yesterday. And 50 years, you know, what have we achieved in 50 years? And it's interesting to see that progression. And I think, as with any food, any culture, any language, there has to be progression, there has to be modernization, there has to be innovation, or else it just dies a natural death, you know. This dish, it can always remain in its original form, which is wrapped in a banana leaf and all that. And there will always be people who will cook it that way. But if we don't improve on flavors, if we don't think about how we can make it better, then maybe our children or our children's children will not find it relevant, or will not find it as interesting or as tasty, and it dies a natural death. Yeah.
You're going to be making this for us in the UAE when you come over for Eat the World.
I'm actually going to do a laksa chicken shawarma.
Oh.
Yes. So that will be kind of fun as well, because, you know, who doesn't like chicken? And laksa, you know, which is also one of the favorite dishes that we have here. So, and it will be in a pita bread, and lots of that luscious laksa gravy drizzled over the chicken. Laksa is a local dish in Singapore and in Malaysia. There are many variations of it, but in Singapore, how we like it is with coconut milk. And laksa actually comes from the Sanskrit word lak, which means a thousand tastes, because it's got so many ingredients in there. It's got like dried prawns, candle nuts, you know, turmeric root, blue ginger, etc., etc. And so it's got this complex lemongrassy, light citrusy flavor, but yet rich and sort of like and coconutty because of the coconut milk. And then you have the laksa leaves, which are Vietnamese mint, and yeah. So it's got all those beautiful flavors. It's got umami from the dried prawns, and then you also have the chicken, you know. So it comes together beautifully.
Sounds wonderful. We're in for a treat, I think. in conversation with Chef Tan, who made her mark at Maxwell's Food Centre with her Nazi Lemak and has gone on to open Revolution Coffee in Media Circle. Nazi means rice and Lemak means rich in Malay, as is the culture to use coconut milk instead of dairy. Bringing us what is described as mod sin, modern Singaporean, I asked Chef Tan about her beef randang.
This was in Singapore maybe 15 years ago. You couldn't get a decent pizza. They were dreadful. And so I used to make my own pizzas, you know, burn myself. I give myself, like, you know, 500 degree burns because it's so hot. You actually have to get the pan that hot. And I didn't have anything in the fridge, and there was some leftover beef rendang. I put it on the pizza, and it tasted great. So it was one of those things that took on a life of its own. Just like the bak chor mee pasta, which as well, you know, it was something that I like to eat and I made at home, and it got put on the menu and then it just took off.
And what is that?
That's kind of like a local dish that is very popular with the Chinese Singaporeans, with liver, and it's served with lard and vinegar and chili in like noodles. So I made a modernized version of it. As I said before, you know, thinking about how can we improve on it, or sort of kind of play with food, flavors, textures, and take it to the next level.
Now, coming back to the dish and chicken, of course, chicken's used a lot in the food here. So talk me through what you've done with the chicken today.
Okay, so this chicken has been marinated for 48 hours in our secret marinade. And it's quite, and it's breaded and deep fried. Mm. So it's very juicy. And, you know, fried chicken always goes well, especially with a bit of chili and a bit of rice. Mm. Yeah.
Delicious. And this is for breakfast.
Yes.
What would you have for lunch? This to me is like a dinner. It's amazing.
It is. It is a full-on breakfast. Yeah, I mean, like, the amazing thing is that you can eat it all the time, and that's the amazing thing about street food culture. If you think about it, you have access to it all day long. You can have it at 3 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon or 7 a.m. Yeah. So that's why I love living in Singapore, and I love our food. I'm immensely proud of our food culture and heritage, and I'm happy to talk about it all the time, as you can tell.
I want to find out more about what's exciting you, maybe what you're developing at the moment, what you're working on. But I know you recently were in Hong Kong and were inspired. Well, in fact, you kind of took your Singaporean inspiration. What did you create off the back of that trip?
Yeah, so, you know, Hong Kong has taken a very classic sort of Western British dish, French toast, and they've deep fried their French toast. Also, they have this fermented prawn paste, which is used a lot in Hong Kong Chinese cooking. And typically, they put it, because of fermentation, right, that's where you get all the umami. It's kind of like miso paste, right? Yeah. So borrowing those ideas, what you do is you marinate it with lamb. Mm. You could do amazing lamb ribs. For example, what I've done recently is lamb ribs with Vegemite or Marmite. You marinate it, and then you braise them, and then you deep fry them.
Oh, incredible, fantastic, and you're so slight as well. We're here at Revolution Coffee. It's a Saturday morning. We're in the Media Circle, so I can get the vibe and sense of what this is like during the week. This is a Saturday, but it's still really busy. People are coming in for their breakfast, for coffee. What else are you working on, and where else are you working?
So I'm also working on a project where hopefully be ready by March or April, where I'm going to start a creative lab where exploring ideas of creating new dishes with local ingredients as much as possible. So now we obviously have access to all these amazing herbs and spices, Southeast Asian herbs and spices, like I said, Vietnamese mint, Thai basil, you know. So I actually want to go off on a whole new direction and just explore using those flavors and creating new dishes, instead of same old, same old. And that's how I think you can actually get an insight into what we have, you know, because it's hot. So we have lots of chilies. We have, like I said, basil. We have lemongrass, turmeric root.
Tamarind.
Tamarind, which is beautifully, you know, acidic, but not grab your tongue kind of acidic. So and slightly sweet, you know. And there are many other herbs that we don't actually use on a daily basis, which we should, you know. And if we started using them, then maybe they'll get more popular and more farmers will grow them. And they all obviously have medicinal and health benefits.
And it's all being sourced within the island, within Singapore?
As much as we can, you know, because...
You've got a lot close by, haven't you?
Yes, so Malaysia, Vietnam, Thailand, at least it's still within the sphere, and it's the flavours we grew up with. So what I'm talking about is really using the flavours that we've grown up with and are familiar with, as opposed to something that is so alien, yeah.
And it's not always about the savoury. I noticed here the Barjang Pick and Dark Chocolate Gula Melaka Caramel Tart. Apologies for my pronunciation.
you can say it better than me.
So, yeah, it's the dark chocolate, dark Barona chocolate with, you know, sea salt and a Gula Melaka butterscotch. So now that is something that, you know, who doesn't like dark chocolate? Yeah. And it's interesting because I actually don't eat a lot of sweets, but the things that people go crazy for are the sweets. Yeah. So
is it a sweet culture here?
It is.
Yeah, is it?
I think everywhere. Mm. Yeah. You'll be hard-pressed to find a culture that is not obsessed with sugar or sweetness. So the Gula Melaka is our local palm sugar that is made in Malacca. That's why it's called Gula Melaka. Gula means sugar. And it's basically coconut palm, the sap. They reduce it and cook it down until it becomes this molassesy sort of like a sugar. And what I do is I make a butterscotch out of it. And it's drizzled over the tart like a glaze.
Well, thank you very much. We're looking forward to you coming to the UAE. Tell us again, just you're going to be doing your shawarma.
So it's going to be grilled chicken, and then it's going to have this lovely laksa gravy over it and stuffed into the pita bread. Yeah,
we're looking forward to it, and yeah, and it's going to be great as well having you guys, as well as the guys from London and America as well,
yes.
California. So it's fantastic, very exciting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting meeting for everybody from different regions, just because, you know, when you get a bunch of crazy cooks get together, you know, there's going to be cross-pollination and just exchange of ideas. And, you know, it should be a lot of eating and fun.
Yeah, really good fun. A big thank you to Chef Shen Tan and for giving me a good feed. Check out my special feature page online at dubaieye1038.com/Dubai Today. Click on the special features page there for the pictures and details on Eat the World DXB, which is coming to us in February. I'm exploring Singapore street food today and the culture with Eat the World DXB, which this year returns to the UAE even bigger and better, with chef demonstrations, food trucks from London and tasty offerings from California. And one of the people who will be creating tasty street food from Singapore is Miss Vicky. Kuei Guan Huat Zhu Xiat Popia. It's a famous family-owned heritage Singaporean street food eatery, preserving the tradition of hand-making popia skins, like fresh spring rolls, a skill passed down through generations. Out in the suburbs of Singapore, I begin by asking Miss Vicky, where are we?
We are in Singapore, and at this place, a very famous street called Joo Chiat Road, which is very popular with heritage, with history, and there is a lot of food restaurants over here. Many Vietnamese restaurants and also many restaurants with long history of establishment.
When you say the heritage, what do you mean?
Heritage means that they have been here for many, many years. Like for instance, our popia, we have been in this food trade for the past 70 over years, coming to 80 years.
That's amazing, isn't it? And a family business.
Yes, it's a family business.
So tell me about popia.
Yes, the meaning of popia is actually a Hokkien term. Hokkien is a dialect from this China. It means thin crepe. It's a thin crepe. That means a thin skin. Yeah, thin skin made of flour, which is used as a wrap.
And the family business started 70 years ago. So popia, this thin wrap, this crepe, has always been part of the culture. Tell me about that and why, where it's come from.
My grandfather is from China at this Fujian province. And my father actually came to Singapore as a teenage boy. So he brought this trait along with him and started pedaling on the road on a tricycle. And that's how he got very popular with his food. And he rented a place, the very same place that we have it here for the past 70 over years. That is 95 Joo Chiat Road. First, he rented a place, and when he earned enough from this making popiah skin, you know, the sales of this skin, then eventually he got married. After he got married, then he got children. And he eventually bought up this shop. And this is where we are here now.
What is it made out of?
It's made of wheat flour, plus some of those flour that helps to keep it very springy and soft.
And when do people eat these?
In China, it's very well known for eating it during the cold period, the winter season. And it's a very popular food for ancestral worship. That means they actually offered to the dead. So when my father came to Singapore to start up this food trade, it was very, very popular during the they called it Chinese New Year period, and also during the tomb cleaning. That means to say ancestor worship, where people go to the tomb to clean the tomb and also offer it up as a kind of offering to the dead.
We're here as celebrations for Chinese New Year are underway, the year of the rooster. I wanted to ask you, I'll ask you aside from this, about the superstitions around Chinese New Year. But when it comes to the popia, it's a special food. We're here in the afternoon. I know you're open from the morning until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So will people they're coming to get their popia, they're going to eat it in the evening or for breakfast, or is it any time of the day?
It is actually a family meal, and people actually cook the vegetable. It's quite a very labor intensive kind of food, in a sense that there are a lot of vegetable cutting. It's all vegetable. It's actually a very healthy food. And for those older generation, the parents like to bond together and do the cutting, do the preparation for the cooking of this popiah vegetable. And actually it's very fun. But I think nowadays, because youngsters, the younger generation, a lot of them are working, and they don't have the time to go through all these sort of cooking processes, this and that. And my mother has been in this food business ever since he married my father. And he has got a very good string of customers, those from an older generation, who actually beg her to cook the vegetables for them. That will ease their chore of, you know, in the kitchen preparation. So my mother has been doing that for many, many years, and now these customers are still with us. So we have a pool of very faithful customers, and they used to ask my mother to prepare it for them.
So we're very lucky that the family are coming to the UAE with Eat the World DXB. So we're going to get to share the popia as well. So you and your sister and your nephew are going to be at Eat the World DXB.
Yes, correct. Yeah. I think it's a very good opportunity, because this is the first time we are going to UAE. We have been to Copenhagen, invited by the Singapore Tourism Board, and we also have been to New York. And the people just love it, because it's really a delicious food, and it's very healthy, very tasty, very soft. It's something very unusual, and they just love it.
And you don't use meat. There's no meat in popia. The filling is always vegetable-based.
It's vegetable, and actually you can put in the things that you like. You know, for us, we put in seafood, we put in minced scallop, we put in minced crab meat, you know. And we have all sorts of condiments, you know, like peanuts, we have crispy fritters, we have all different types of vegetable that makes it very delicious. It's halal certified. We have a lot of Muslim customers as well.
You do here in Singapore?
Yes, certainly, yes. Yes.
So do you put chicken in, or?
Chicken is up to the customers. Customers themselves can actually prepare it at home, shred the chicken meat and just put it inside.
But yeah. Traditionally it's vegetable?
Traditionally, yes, it's vegetable.
And what kind of vegetables would you use?
We use turnip, we use carrot, we use vegetable beancurd pieces. Then we have tauge, we have lettuce leaves. We even have celery. You can put in celery inside. And we got garlic. You can put in omelette as well. You can put all sorts of things also.
So, Miss Vicky, will we go inside and let's have a look at how to make popia?
So, this is it's quite a very manual, labor-intensive work preparing the popia skin itself. First, my brother has to beat up the dough, mix the dough, beat the dough until it is suitable for taking the lump of dough and heat up the hot pan. And with his skill, with years of skill, you know, handling the, they call it a dollop of dough, he will just roll it onto the pan and make it round, roll it in a round circular way and quickly pick up the dough back, you know.
Well, I can see because yeah. This
so
is very
thin.
I can feel the heat coming
off
the pans.
Correct,
and your
correct.
Brother is, with this big lump of dough,
correct.
He is manually putting that onto the hot plate and rubbing the dough in. So he has to be careful he doesn't burn himself.
Yes, he has to be careful. For those who are trying to learn the trade, normally they have a burnt palm. Yeah. They will burn their palm because the pan is very hot.
It's considered an art for the technique.
Yes, it's an art. You have to acquire it over years. That means it gets better and better in the sense that the skins get thinner and thinner.
Well, I've been filming it as well. Just remind me again, what's the dough? So it's wheat, it's water.
It's wheat, water, salt. And a bit of other kind of flour to just to make it very springy and soft.
Okay, lovely. So I can see then the skin is being made and it's quite a quick process.
It is. It can only be, you can only have this speed after years of experience and skill.
Wow. Yeah. So how many skins might you make in a day?
It all depends on the customer's orders. On the average, sometimes we can make about, you know, that means if it's a public holiday, we can make about maybe about 50 over kg of skins.
Wow.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. Your brother is the master then?
Yes, he's the master. In fact, he has been imparting the skill to his son, and Michael, that's a son.
Michael, is that who's coming to the UAE?
No. Michael is actually a pharmacist, and he actually giving up his profession to take over the family business.
So how many in your family?
Oh, we have a very big family. We have more than 10 of us, 16 children actually.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. It was wonderful to get that demonstration up close there of the fresh popia skins being made. Quite an art. Check out the pictures online at dubaieye1038.com/Dubai Today on the special features page. You can see the video and those popia skins being made for yourself. More to come from Miss Vicky as I sit down, rolling and tasting. It's Chinese New Year and it's the year of the rooster, and I enjoyed catching up with Miss Vicky and her sister and the extended family, who are the number one popia makers in Singapore. The family extended their warm hospitality and teach me lots about their culture.
The meaning of Kuai Guan Huat Yu Chiat means Guan is
the last word, Huat meaning is that in Chinese culture when they shout around the gathering table to wrap the popia forward, it signifies prosperous, good health, unity, you know.
So everyone shouting that, good health, prosperity.
Yes, they were shouting Hokkien, huat ah, huat ah.
Huat ah, huat ah.
Huat ah, huat ah, you know. This is a compulsory, you know, vote, a motto for them. Just bring up that spirit, you know.
And beautiful, so it's like a ritual.
Yes, it's a ritual, you know. This is something like a culture, very important, significant culture to them.
Wonderful, and that's what?
Yeah, that's what. Now, guan, oh my, guan is wealth. It's guan is really wealth. It brings, whatever your dream, it brings it all come true.
Beautiful, and even more so with it being Chinese New Year.
Oh, yes. And now, kui, it really goes well with the popia because kui is actually a dessert, and popia is one of them. Considered as a delicacy dessert, and it's a healthy dessert, and people eat it. Ooh, they find it real joy.
Aww. Yeah. So it's wonderful because it's what food should be, which is bringing people together and bringing joy to each other.
Yes, it's correct. Yes.
So that's the meaning of Kuai Guan Huat.
Yes.
Yay. Oh, now then, Miss Vicky, you're back.
Why don't you eat first?
I know.
It's hot.
Is it hot?
Yeah.
I don't know if I was
It's a bit warm.
So it's hot. Okay, I don't know if
warm,
I was
warm.
Warm, lovely.
Yes.
So tell me what's in your popia that you've made for me today.
Okay, this the vegetable is specially cooked with turnip, carrot, and beancurd, and we cooked it with minced scallop and minced crab meat and garlic. You taste it, it's very, very tasty.
You have wrapped it in the popia.
Yes.
But also you have them standing up in these little...
Yes, this is called the golden cup. Golden cup, that means to say we fry the batter into a cup, and this is also part of the popia. And this is actually a nonya. They call it a nonya delicacy. Nonya is Peranakan. That means it's straight-born Malay and Chinese breed. Yeah. This is called Kueh Pai Tee Cup.
Okay, so what should I start with?
You can try the spring roll.
Okay.
Yes.
With the popia skin.
Yes.
Oh, it looks mighty fine there. Beautiful inside. There's a little... What's the sauce?
The sauce is fruit sauce. Fruit sauce.
Mmm. It's a perfect size to fit in the mouth.
Correct.
How you cut it. So... I love the chewiness, the springiness of the skin, like you said.
Very soft.
Yes. And it's very comforting, and the lovely vegetables inside, and then that sweetness of the sauce.
Yes, correct.
And a bit of crunchiness.
Children love it. They love it, yes.
And it's so healthy, all full of goodness.
Correct.
Very lovely indeed. Yes. Let me try the, what's it called again?
This is called Kueh Pai Tee. You can even call it a golden cup.
A golden cup.
Yes.
So... I'm going to just bite into it like a like it's like an ice cream cornet.
Correct. You can even put ice cream inside.
Delicious.
You know, you can actually put a lot of things inside this rack. You know, some of the rich people, they can actually put in lobster. They put lobster meat. They can even buy the abalone, then they shred it in a strip and they put it in. That is really exquisite popia.
It's so wonderful you've got all this history to your popia, because you're like the number one popia maker in Singapore. So obviously you've got the experience, but what is it that's setting you apart from anyone else?
I think we sell the food fresh. Besides selling the food fresh, our vegetables are actually home cooked. In a sense that we take pride in our labor. That means we stir fry the vegetable, and we prepare all the different types of vegetable with dedication. You know, and we know that proper frying and proper cooking makes the veggie very different.
It's so tasty, and it is that sort of home cooked feeling and authentic, so
yes,
authentic.
Correct.
What about leftovers? What about the popia skin? Do you have you must have leftovers.
Yes, the leftover popia skin, you can actually use it to wrap and deep fry it. For instance, you can use it to make samosa, to make popia goreng, spring roll, they call it spring roll. And you can use it for many, many things. You can use it to wrap curry potato. You can even use to wrap a banana, mashed banana. And sweet potato, a lot of things. There's a lot of use for the frozen popia skin. Yeah, Singaporeans love the popia because I think they know that it's a healthy food. It contains a lot of vegetable, and it's not oily and very tasty. And they just love to have it, even as a snack or even a family dinner or lunch.
And this, what we've got, I've been eating here, is what you'll be serving in Dubai in the UAE.
Yes, correct.
Oh, we're in for a treat. So does it mean then that I should be saying what, what, before I eat it, to bring prosperity into my life, to make my dreams come true?
Yes, I think for the people in China, when after they do the ancestral worship, it is normally their norm to shout it aloud, you know. What means prosper, you know, prosperity, you know. Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you, Miss Vicky. Thank you very much. Find out more details about Eat the World DXB coming to us in February from the 23rd to the 26th at Burj Park. More on Miss Vicky and her family as well at dubaieye1038.com/Dubai Today on the special features page. Pictures, videos and information. Stay with me when we come back. More to come from Singapore with Eat the World DXB. I'm also going to be speaking to Chris McCarty, head of sport, as the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championships are underway this morning.
We return now to Singapore with Eat the World DXB, where food culture is firmly bedded in the hawker centres and streets of this tropical island. Did you know there are more than 40,000 varieties of cultivated rice and over 100 types of noodles from all over the world, not including pasta? Carrying on the traditions of his grandmother is Douglas, a young cook based at Timber Plus, a modern installation appealing to the younger generation. I sat down with Douglas at his stall to learn more about the fishbowl story, and I began by asking about the location and the next generation of street food vendors.
So it's a very good location for younger generation. So in a way, they are promoting hawker culture to the new generation of people in Singapore, because our heritage is in fact coming to an end, I feel. Of all the hawkers that are retiring every year, there's only a handful of young hawkers that are actually coming to this industry. So I'm one of them. And I'm actually keeping my grandmother's recipe going. And she just actually make the fish balls at home like twice a year for us. So I have no intention of becoming a hawker before. I enjoy what I do, and I'm in love with culinary. So I decided to pick up skills from my grandmother, and it took me around 4 months of research and development before I actually got serious. And then I decided, okay, let's take the risk and start. Yeah, that's how it all started for myself. And I've been in this industry for 3 years. Started from a hawker center, and now I'm at a very modern environment. We can create new concepts here. There's events almost every month, and we can create collaborations, ideas with different chefs from Singapore. So that keeps traditional interesting, at the same time letting the young people enjoy fusion food from hawker dishes. Yeah.
I think to understand what hawker means, I keep using the term, and I've been to some of the hawker centres, but just explain to us what it really means to you in Singapore.
Hawkers in Singapore, actually hawkers, this is a tradition and a culture in Singapore, because in Singapore it's all about food, because we are multiracial and we have all kinds of people here that are trying to make different kinds of food. But at the end of the day, local street food is still something that is comforting to eat every day. So when hawkers they are called hawkers because they used to operate by the streets. But because of hygiene issues, and we are being moved to, hawkers are being moved to hawker centers where they can manage it well, from hygiene to water supplies to gas. And yeah, so these hawkers have been doing it for so many years and are still going. But about this trade, is very tiring. Easily work more than 12 hours a day in the heat. So whipping up a dish in the hawker is not easy. And recently, there's a lot of problems in Singapore because of high rental, difficult to hire people because nobody want to work in this so-called dirty work. Yeah, so that's why maybe things have to change from environment to the different concept of food to accept. But hawker is our culture, and maybe 10-20 years down the road, if there are still hawkers there, then it will be great, because children of different generations can get to enjoy what their grandparents have enjoyed a long time ago.
And it's real food, isn't it? And it's food from families, it's food for the family, for the worker, for the person walking down the street. It's limited equipment, you're turning over food very quickly, so it has its challenges.
The amount of work, amount of prep that we put into our dish is a lot. And hawkers are very particular about quality, because everything you whip up is fresh. You get fresh ingredients, and people can taste, because there's so many options out there, right? But if they keep coming back for more, means something special is about the food. So every individual hawker have their own specialty. So the amount of effort have to be appreciated more. That's why slowly, because of the rise of ingredients, the cost, we are slowly increasing our price. But it's been, I mean, bad response on that, because people are thinking that, oh, it's getting more expensive. But you cannot compare from now and then, because costs have increased, everything have increased, but the food price have been the same since 10 years ago, right? So chicken rice is $3 10 years ago. Chicken rice is still $3 now. So it's very hard for them to sustain the whole business idea, yeah.
So tell me about the fishbowl story.
Fishbowl, the story, we are, why people like our food, because our fish balls and fish cakes are all handmade. So it's 100% fish. And it's something that you can, it's not easily found in Singapore anymore, because of the technique that we use. Many people are preferring to rely on suppliers from factories. And when you're talking about that kind of volume, some parts of the process have been compromised. So we don't believe in that. I will never compromise my quality. That's why we keep the tradition, and maybe because of this reason, people are still coming back for our food. So everything is handmade, homemade. We use yellowtail fish for the fish balls and the fish cakes. So fish ball and fish cake is slightly different. Fish cakes, we have different kind of ingredients. We have chili, we have scallions, we have different kind of ingredients involved. For our sambal chili, because fish ball noodle, we Singapore, they like to have it dried. So with some sambal chili, sambal is, every kind of food have different kind of sambal. So for fish ball, sorry, we have fish ball sambal. For barbecue seafood, we have barbecue seafood sambal. So fish ball noodle sambal, we are very particular about the dried shrimps that we use. So we have shallots inside, we have garlic, we have dried shrimps. So a chili paste as well. So everything comes together, and you will have a different kind of umami taste in that sambal that we toss it with vinegar with the noodles. Noodles must be al dente, right? And then you get the whole different kind of flavors. We will add some broth, our own broth in it, and our broth, we have chicken, fish, vegetables, all kind of things inside our broth. So the broth is slightly more, it's not so strong, the taste, and not rich, because it's actually, it balances well with the rich tasteness in the noodles itself. So it's kind of clear your palates after you eat. So the density of our fish balls is different from the ones in the factory, because we use 100% fish meat. Factories, fish ball maybe just 20%, 30%. So the density, you can taste it, the bounciness in the fish meat, the springy fish meat, fish balls. So that's why fish ball stories stand out from the average fish ball noodles. Yep.
So out of everything your grandmother made, what made you think of the fish balls? What drew you to those?
My grandmother actually only make the fish balls. And then I kind of bring the idea of fish ball noodles together from having the thoughts of what I used to eat when I was young, and I'm missing them a lot. They are gone. So I had to do my own research and bring them, you know, like fixing a puzzle.
Were you born in Singapore?
I'm born in Singapore, yeah. And I'm very fortunate to be able to enjoy hawker food since I was young, because it's not what every children can actually experience, because my dad is a big fan of Singapore food. So he always bring us around from midnight to early morning in the breakfast, he'll bring us out for hawker food. So the younger generation nowadays, the parents are too busy working. So they just eat food that are either just fast food or food that are not really artisanal. So I'm one of the fortunate ones. That's why I understand what hawker culture means to me.
Shall we go and put a dish together?
All right, sure.
Yeah,
all right.
Cool.
So I'm sitting down at Timber Plus, a cool food concept in Singapore, with Eat the World DXB, and I'm at the Fishbowl Story stall with Douglas, who recently earned a Bib Gourmand Award in the inaugural Singapore Michelin Guide. Having shown me how to make the dish of fishballs and noodles, I sit down to taste it with a delicious glass of fresh calamansi.
Okay, so we've made the dish. It looks absolutely gorgeous, and I think with the noodle and what you saw there was the chili paste being separated as you mixed it in with the noodle. The noodle was cooked really quickly because you've got that high heat, and then you with the broth. I think my biggest surprise is what I imagined being a fishbowl would be, something that was bigger and sort of fried. Actually, what you have here, fish cake, which is sliced, which you took from you making a big batch, like a size of a melon, and then slice it up.
We have the fish skin as well, the fried fish skin, and the fish balls and the fish dumpling, including this fried dumpling. With beancurd skin on the outside, fish meat wrap in the inside. So this bowl of noodles, majority of the ingredients I use is actually fish. And I would say it's a healthy balance, because the fish is really 100% fish. We don't add starch or flour inside, which some people with different kind of allergies can't eat that kind of stuff. So this is really healthy in a way. So
you've got the lettuce there, a bit of lettuce.
Yeah, correct. The lettuce is actually a good balance. I mean, in a way, it kind of buys people heart that it's healthier. So please try.
I'm going to try. And you've got the fish skin there as well. Now, I had tested the other day the salted fish skin, but this is different, right? You get all different kinds.
Yeah, the fish skin, there's a lot of different fish skins. Salted egg fish skin, fish skins. But this is just the original flavor of it, of the fish skin. So you won't have it too strong, the taste. So it's... yeah, toss the noodle well before you start.
Okay, I'm going to start tossing.
Yep.
Oh, goodness me, it looks absolutely gorgeous. The colour with the paste and the noodles, mixing it all in, a great big bowl of goodness there. Okay, I haven't even tasted it. Is that enough? Yeah. He's telling me that's enough. Right, it might take me a while with the chopsticks. Forgive my technique. Okay, I need a napkin, really, but here we go. It's going to go in. I love that. I love the texture of the noodle. Who said al dente?
Yeah.
It's so true. I think we overcook it. That paste, the chili, and those, I haven't even got to the fishy bit. It's absolutely gorgeous. Right.
We try to do it in a way where it's not too spicy.
It's not too spicy. Yeah. I can't take too much spice, but it's got a lovely, it's really good quality. That's the thing, right? You said this is on the street.
You don't compromise it.
Yeah. Ah, very soft and springy, lovely texture. Quite subtle fish taste, which is nice.
Yeah.
Not over too much.
Correct, correct. You don't want the fish to be very fishy.
No.
Yeah.
Let's try the cake. What you call the cake?
Yeah, fish cake. Bai.
That's a bit stronger. What's the spice in there?
There's chili.
Chili.
There's celery leaves.
Celery leaves.
Yeah. And there's also fermented vegetables.
Fermented vegetables, that's what it is. Very nice, it's different, gorgeous put together. What are you charging for this?
We are just charging $6.
$6?
Yeah, six Singapore dollars.
Yeah, it's about 20 dirhams. Amazing quality. Now I'm going for the fish skin. I never thought I'd say this. That's really good. That is really good, and you're right, it's nice, it's not salty.
Yeah.
And again, not too fishy. Really, so you've got the crunch and lots of different textures.
Yeah, different textures in the noodles.
Absolutely, and those, I love, absolutely love the noodles. I'm really glad we filmed this. You can check it out online, because I've had my lesson in how to cook noodles correctly. Tell me again what these noodles are.
Mee pok, we call it mee pok.
Mee pok.
Mee pok, yeah.
Mee pok.
Yeah, mee pok. It's like flat noodles. Yeah. Flat egg noodles, in fact, yeah, egg noodles.
If you could see me now, I've got sauce all over my face, I think. It's absolutely gorgeous. So would you put the broth in, add the bit of broth
want
it?
You that one is for you to clear up your palates when it's too rich, you feel.
So
you kinda have a balance, yes, that's right.
Have a little sip of that. Oh, that's nice.
It's clear
broth.
It's simple. It's just for you to clear your palates. Yeah, we don't want to make it too strong. If not, everything will come too strong and rich. Yeah.
this seems very natural to me, because I think when we're used to eating these sorts of foods, sometimes there's, you know, additives. Mm. Is there anything in here? You've got some salt?
We have salt, but we don't add, like, preservative to keep them, you know, to store them. We don't have food wastage. We try to make them fresh every day. And that's the integrity of our business.
Yeah.
Mm. Superb. Tell me about the Bib
Gourmand. So recently we were awarded the Michelin Bib Gourmand. So there were 17 stores in Singapore that were awarded this award. So I think I'm very fortunate that we were awarded this award this year, because it's a new award, and I've always dreamt about Michelin, right? About the stars, about, I've watched a lot of from movies to documentaries to reading books about different kind of chefs, and I never thought I could be part of it. So getting this recognition, I'm really thankful for it, and it actually gives the tourists that come to Singapore a better idea of the food in Singapore, and there's too many food for them to choose from. So basically it's like a short list for them to come to, and we hope to see more tourists from different countries coming here, especially Dubai, and hopefully we can meet different kinds of people from all over the world. Yeah.
And the fishbowl story continues.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks to Douglas at the Fishbowl Story. You can see all the pictures online at dubaieye1038.com/Dubai today, and click on the special features page there. Eat the World DXB is bringing food trucks from London, and you'll find out about the food and the chefs who are all going to be gathering at Burj Park from the 23rd to the 26th of February. More to come from Singapore when I come back, and we meet food dude, Chef Bjorn Shen, who through the power of his persuasion got me to eat the pungent smelling fruit that is durian. He's described as a dude and being rebellious in the kitchen, and he's coming to the UAE with Eat the World DXB. He is Chef Bjorn Shen. Eat the World DXB are bringing together street food from London, the UAE, California and Singapore. So having met the cooks in London, I headed east to Singapore. Chef Bjorn made his mark when he opened Artichoke, a Middle Eastern inspired cafe, but we meet at his latest concept, Bird, and I'm keen to find out about the offerings there, but begin by asking Chef about what he's going to be making for us here in the UAE.
There's tip of the iceberg Singaporean food, and there's not so tip of the iceberg Singaporean food. Every time I travel overseas to do a food festival or a food event that represents Singapore, I always try and do the less tip of the iceberg stuff, because everyone knows chicken rice, everyone knows chili crab. So I try and do other things. Like in this case, I'm going to do a Milo Godzilla, and I'm going to do a Pink Panther. These are actual things. I did not make them up.
How are they actual things?
They are actual Singaporean things, right? So let's talk about the Milo Godzilla first. Before you understand the Milo Godzilla, you have to understand the Milo dinosaur. Okay?
Milo dinosaur. Evolution happening.
Yes, evolution.
Here.
So people were not content with just drinking ice Milo. Ice Milo is a very big thing here in Singapore. Ice Milo as a beverage, very popular beverage. Someone decided to take it one level further by putting a teaspoonful of Milo powder at the top. So you can drink it, and you can also spoon that powder from the top and crunch on that powder. That's called a Milo dinosaur, okay? And then people were, again, not satisfied, so they took it a level further and they put a scoop of ice cream on it. So it's Milo drink on ice with an extra scoop of Milo powder and a scoop of ice cream. And some people take it even further, putting another scoop of Milo powder. So I'm going to do a Milo Terminator to end it all, because no one messes with Terminator. We're going to take the Milo Godzilla even one level further by putting in even more crazy stuff. So I know it doesn't sound very Singaporean, but trust me, it is.
And you're going to create something with me in a little while. What are we going to do?
We're going to do just one of the desserts over here at the restaurant we're sitting in, called Bird. It's a Rupal Berry Softy Pie.
I love the sound of it. I don't know what it is. We'll find out in a little while. Tell me about Bird. It's recently opened here in Singapore. How did this come about?
Bird is my newest baby. It's about 1 year and 3 months old by now. I've had my flagship restaurant, Artichoke, for the last 6.5 years. That's a Middle Eastern restaurant. And, you know, we just can't sit still. So we got to be doing new things. A year and a half ago, I said, let's open this fried chicken restaurant, and that was it. You know, I'm a fat guy. I like fried chicken. Makes perfect sense.
But there's a lot of fried chicken in Singapore, right?
There's a lot of different types of fried chicken in Singapore. There's Singapore fried chicken, there's, you know, Indian styles of fried chicken, there's Korean fried chicken, which is very popular. Everyone knows the Japanese fried chicken, karaage chicken and all that. The chicken that we do here is like an American style fried chicken, brined in Old Bay and buttermilk, you know. It's just, you know, it's something that fits within people's comfort zones.
I can see on the board today, soup of the day, kimchi tomato soup. That's interesting.
That gets paired very well with our 5-cheese grilled cheese sandwich. You know, so we do dude food. I might do Middle Eastern at Artichoke. I might do fried chicken at Bird Bird. But the overarching philosophy that I have in cooking is called dude-stronomy. It's dude food meets gastronomy. So if we can reduce everything that's premium and fine into a taco, we will do that. Or if we can turn everything into a donut, we will do that. That's dude food. That's dude-stronomy.
So how did you get into all this? I mean, what your journey started off, I mean, did you grow up in Singapore?
Yes, I did. I grew up in Singapore. I'm lucky that my parents weren't so conservative in the sense that they didn't have such huge objections to me doing, you know, what I do. Because traditionally speaking, I'm ethnically Chinese. And, you know, if you come from an ethnically Chinese home, you know, parents kind of want you to be either one of two things, a doctor or a lawyer. Or maybe an accountant, you know. So I had parents who were pretty flexible with me in that sense. So they didn't try and stop me too hard when I told them that I wanted to cook, you know. And I worked my first job as a dishwasher at this place called the Outsider Cafe. And I cut myself every night on knives that were hidden underneath the dishwashing liquid. And it was a rough few months. I proved to them that I really wanted it. And I went off to Australia. I lived in Australia after that for the next 7.5 years. Got myself a job there. Got myself educated there. And came back to Singapore after that 7.5 years to open Artichoke. And it's been like that ever since.
And Artichoke being, you know, inspired by the Middle East, I see you've got lamb shakshuka on your menu there. Can you tell me a little bit about your lamb shakshuka?
There's a lot of Middle Eastern influence in the cafe scene in Australia, which is where I spend most of my time. Shakshuka, I've never had it in the Middle East, but everywhere you go in Australia, they call it baked eggs, you know? So it's a cafe staple. Artichoke is at heart a cafe. So our lamb shakshuka is, you know, just, you know, nice, deep, rich, spicy tomato sauce filled with tender chunks of, you know, pulled lamb shoulder from a lamb shoulder that's been roasted for 6 hours. You know, and then it's we crack a couple of eggs on top, cook it in the oven, serve it with some pita bread. We do it traditional with this green hot sauce called skoug, originally from Algeria and Morocco. Yeah. It's a Berber sort of thing, you know, nomadic kind of food, but it is currently very popular.
So you're a busy fellow. I know you're also involved in sort of educating others, and you've been writing books, and you're involved in the media here in Singapore. So how would you hold somebody's hand those first few steps into understanding the food scene in Singapore?
The food scene in Singapore is extremely diverse. Let me start by saying that, you know, you've got food on the street, like you said, you've got food in good casual restaurants, and you've got food in very high-end fine dining restaurants. Street food, obviously, is what I love doing. It's my personality. It's messy, it's grubby, it's anything that gets your face dirty when you eat it. You know, there's no clean way to eat street food. You gotta go where the locals go. You gotta go where the locals go. I mean, you can hang out in the shopping malls in Singapore and eat at the food courts, but what's the point? You know, you got to get out there. If a street looks too dirty, walk down that street and eat the first thing that you see.
Well, today I was in the China complex.
Oh,
and I just kept going up levels. And then I walked into this huge floor of just so many booths of food and so many people eating. It was actually quite overwhelming.
It is. It's a sensory overload, so to speak, you know. Okay, Singapore is a very young country, let's say. It's not a country with its own race. There are countries with their own race, like Thailand. Thailand has its own race, You know, Vietnam has its own race. Singapore does not have its own race. We call ourselves Singaporeans, but we are always ethnically something else. A lot of us are Chinese, Indian, and Malay. So when we talk about Singaporean food, we're referring to Chinese, Indian, and Malay food. That's what we're talking about. And of course, as the population, as the social fabric changes, as more people coming in from Thailand and Burma and Philippines, you know, it does gradually develop and change what is the identity of Singapore food. That's what I love about it. It's still in its evolution.
If you were going to head down to a hawker centre, what would be your choice?
You can't get it now, but it's a raw fish salad. It's almost like a Chinese-style ceviche, dressed with soy and calamansi lime and sesame seeds and sesame oil. There was a scare a couple of years ago with freshwater fish. So the authorities have banned the use of raw freshwater fish in Singapore. And that entire dish has been affected because I can't find it now. No one even sells it underground.
I like the idea that there's an underground food movement. So you're in Frankel Avenue, and it's a cool little place here. I'm looking on your fish of the day. You've got country fried salmon, coleslaw, curly fries, lots of beverage and choices alongside some great coffee as well. And what you're also known for are your milky smoothies, slushies.
Yeah, okay. So we got a couple of slushy machines right here. You can go put your mic up to it later on and hear it go shh, shh, shh. So we've got one which is a red tea. Next to the red tea, we've got lemonade. And then next to that, we've got a yuzu green tea. So you can mix all three if you want. I like to mix all three. Either that, or you can just take the red tea and you can mix it with the lemonade. What you get is an Arnold Palmer. Arnold Palmer slushy. Come on. Say what?
I love it. So should we head over there then? And you're going to create something for us, something sweet.
Yeah, let's do a dessert.
Okay.
Yeah. How are you with durian? No.
Oh, you know what? That's everyone goes, why? Actually, I've just been smelling. Oh, I was taking pictures in the market today of durian, and I mean, 5 feet away, I was lured there by the aroma of it.
Does it smell like socks?
It smells like fusty socks. And then I think last evening, you know, with it being Chinese New Year, there are all the little biscuits and cookies, and this lady got me to try the durian one.
Yep. Sulfuric. I mean, it takes a very special kind of person to like durian. You know, it's not, you know, I admire the first person who cracked open this fruit and said, let's try this. Let's put it in our mouth. Because I can, even though I like it, I can understand why it's the most disgusting thing in the world for everyone else. You know, I can completely understand. Go out of your way to choose the durian that's the smelliest and the most pungent, and it tastes like rotten eggs. Yeah, it's like a hard-boiled egg went off. That's exactly the taste of a durian.
You're known for being rebellious, so this is what's happening, right? You're gonna convert me, are you?
No, it's okay. I'll give you a teaspoon of it later. Well, I'll set you up with this thing called the Rupelberry Softy Pie. It's rhubarb, apple, and strawberry.
Sounds great. Okay, right. This is an honour. I'm behind the counter at Bird Bird with Chef Bjorn here.
Hello. Yakshimash. Very nice. I like. Great success. I on a radio show. I may just start from the top. My name is Bjorn and I'm really looking forward to my first time in Dubai, you know, at the Eat the World Festival. We got some really amazing stuff lined up. So, yeah, we're going to go for it when we're there.
We're going to rock it.
So this is a one of the desserts that I'm going to show you over here. This we call the Rupelberry Softy Pie. The word Rupelberry, we invented ourselves. It's a combination of rhubarb, apple, and strawberry. And we've cooked it down into a nice little stew or compote, if you want to be technical about that. And it's kind of like an American pie, you know, a cobbler or a pie. Yeah. But in a different form altogether.
Mm. And rhubarb, is this something that grows here? Or?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Where are you getting your rhubarb from then?
It Malaysia.
Mm.
Yeah. We don't grow a lot of things in Singapore. It's the space. Space is an issue here. Yeah. It's not enough space for us to move around, let alone grow things, you know.
But you've got a lot around you, haven't you?
We got a lot around us. Yeah. We got a lot of countries that produce good things around us. So that's what we call, when we call it local, that's what it means technically. Yeah. From around the region. So anyway, what we have here is a tart base, just a, you know, crispy pastry base, on which we piped this toasted milk soft serve ice cream. Toasted milk being, we take milk powder and we toast it till it's dark brown, and we make our ice cream base out of that toasted milk. So it's going to be nutty, it's going to be malty, it's not going to taste like your usual, any flavor that you've ever had. It's a bit caramelly, so to speak. So yes, so this is our toasted milk ice cream sitting on a tart base, and then we move over and we put on some of these, this mixture, which is stewed apples, strawberries, and a rhubarb. Boom. Remember, we want to get some of that nice juice that's sitting at the bottom onto the dish as well. So, I'm going to be a bit generous here. Ow! Ah, go for it. Let's go for it. Hope you're hungry.
It looks lovely. I love the colours, actually. So you've got a sort of beigey with the pinks and oranges and colours. So you're just nestling those all around the dessert in the centre. Now you're laying on pecans.
Can you want to try one?
Please, thank
you. Candied pecan.
Candied
pecan, because if you can candy it, why not?
That's delicious.
If you can candy it, but you don't, that's a sin.
And what's this?
This is kataifi pastry.
This is your Middle Eastern influence.
Yeah, taking a page out of our Middle Eastern flagship restaurant, Artichoke. So this is just a brown butter and slightly salted kataifi. So we just lay it on the top, boom. And we can add a little bit more. Okay, and we want to drizzle on a little bit of this from the squeeze bottle, which is a reduction of that same liquid that, you know, all those apples and strawberry and rhubarb was cooking in.
Rupelberry sauce.
Why waste it, right? We drizzle it on, and then again, just because, you know, we want to add a bit of a feminine touch, because I'm such a feminine kind of person, you know.
You're in touch with that side.
With all my dude food and all, you know, I got to balance it out once in a while. Rose petals.
How lovely.
So this is the dessert.
Fantastic. Well, we're filming this as well, so check it out online. Let's have a little taste, shall we?
Of course. Okay. If it's not good, just spit it out. it should be all right.
So I'm just going to dive in. Does it matter, really?
Get all the way down there. Get everything.
Yeah,
toasted milk.
It was quite a big mouthful. Oh, that's gorgeous.
Brain freeze. It's the brain freeze setting.
I love the malted. Oh, let me get some of the canapé as well.
I'll get some of that fruit. Okay, she can't stop now. She's in it.
So that's it now.
Yeah.
So that sweetness, lovely and smooth, and then the crunch, and then with the nuts, but the fruit, getting that bit of acidic, beautiful sweetness as well.
Yep.
Absolutely. There's a lot going on there. Really delicious.
That's a ton. We are not shy. What I can say is we are definitely not shy when we create a dish.
And I like the fact it's not overly sweet.
The kataifi is a little bit salty as well, so that kind of helps to balance the whole thing. Yeah. That's the rhubarb. Yep. Say ah. Open sesame.
Very nice.
I love rhubarb. It's not used enough, I don't think, but, you know, it's not always easy to get hold of.
Yeah, you know this old wives' tale that it's poisonous? Have you heard that? Like, if you eat a rhubarb raw, it's poisonous. You start foaming at the mouth and some nonsense like that.
I'm from Britain. We love rhubarb.
Yeah. So, well, maybe that puts some people in the other parts of the world off.
Yeah.
I don't know. But.
Well, this is absolutely delicious. What's it called again? The Rupelberry.
Rupelberry.
Chef
Bjorn. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
We're so looking forward to you coming to the UAE with Eat the World DXB for more of this sweetness.
Thank you very much.
Now, you can see the making of the Rupelberry Softy Pie online at dubaii1038.com/Dubai Today and click on the special features page. We made a short film for you as well. Check that out. And you can also see pictures of Chef Bjorn's Durian Softy Pie with softy ice cream, burnt white chocolate, almond cookie crust and salted palm caramel. But with all that sweet loveliness, you cannot disguise the smell and distinctive flavour of durian. All I can say is, you can run, Durian, but you cannot hide.